Welcome to the Great Awakening Empowerment Tools Podcast. This is Dr. Brent Davis reading Chapter 10 from my 2014 book, The Floral Hand of God, Secret Healing Codes of Flowers Revealed. The chapter title is How Dreams Become Real, Flowers from the Stars. The title that I gave this podcast is actually a much more relevant description of the topics that will be discussed. Brief introductory remarks. I wrote Chapter 10 in 2013, and I never would have predicted then that such blatant forces of darkness and consuming control would envelop the earth in just a few years. From the beginning of 2020 until now, a battle is waging between light and darkness that is surely equal in magnitude to the epic depictions in two movie sagas I examine following. It is essential now for all conscious human beings to vision, or if you will, dream into reality, with the help of special flowers, a renewal of essential human liberties that have been co-opted by individuals and entities bent on domination, manipulation, and control. Reading now from Chapter 10, title, How Dreams Become Real, Flowers from the Stars. The following unusually written chapter may seem obscure at first. There truly is a reason for mentioning larger-than-life movies that depict the play of light and dark forces, for that subject has a real relationship with the protective and transformational frequencies of flowers. And I will get to the point. It is curious that in early 2011, a few months before I was to take an epic journey high into the Andes Mountains to search for super forces of light resident in flowers there, that I should feel impelled to view two movie trilogies again. It seemed they had a message reinforced by powerful images, of which I needed to be aware. When we carry the resonance of a specific awareness, it can act as an attractor field that will draw to us the experience, necessary encounter, etc., associated with that awareness. In this particular case, I speculated awareness of certain themes in the movie trilogies might help me find important flowers associated with those themes. I enjoy certain science fiction and fantasy movies for many reasons, but principally because they allow us to escape the confines of normative, restricted thinking, sometimes stimulating a closer look at who we really are and how we are responsible for the world we create. Movies can fulfill the role that morality plays have served throughout history, and in recent years, two such examples are the epic trilogies of The Lord of the Rings, based on J.R.R. Tolkien's The Lord of the Rings novels, and the Star Wars prequels conceived by George Lucas. Both these trilogies depict the age-old theme of a duality, the struggle between the forces of light and darkness. One might ask why it has been necessary, from the Ramayana to Faust to the present time, to continue presenting to audiences depictions of that duality. Apparently, this theme is still necessary to present because the bulk of humanity has not fully appreciated that we are constantly subject to the play of light and darkness in our life, that we are always free to identify and choose the light, love, kindness, humility, forgiveness, integrity, and that it is always a good idea to do so. Certain of the characters in each of these trilogies beautifully depict the traits and choices that either support manifestation of good dreams or prevent it. Whether or not we choose the light must bear strongly on whether our dreams that are purely motivated actually materialize. In Lord of the Rings, the embodiment of evil, Dark Lord Sauron, created a talismanic ring associated with his ability to remain unchallenged in his plan for world domination. As long as the ring exists, Sauron, with his array of dark powers that destroy light, will prevail. The Wizard of Light, Gandalf, and other council see that Sauron can only be defeated in his campaign for domination if the ring is destroyed by throwing it into the fires of the volcanic Mount Doom, where it was originally forged. To destroy the ring is deemed to be virtually impossible unless someone could be found with undaunted courage, trust, and a completely pure heart. Frodo Baggins, a hobbit, small in stature, with no magical powers, volunteers for the extremely dangerous mission of destroying the ring, knowing he might lose his life in the process. Frodo's closest friend, Sam, has such a deep fraternal love for him that he will not allow Frodo to go on a virtual suicide mission alone, and he accompanies him for support. Sam is the embodiment of devotion and selfless love. Frodo and Sam need a guide along their perilous journey and attract a malicious being named Gollum, who poses as a helper but is actually motivated solely by the prospect of stealing the ring for the purpose of personal power. Gollum is the embodiment of guile, ambivalence, treachery, and selfishness. He is an exaggerated personification of what is called in some spiritual traditions the lesser self. Sam's unwavering love and loyalty to Frodo is such a strong force that it buoys Frodo when he is exhausted to a point near death and allows him to prevail in destroying the ring and Sauron, the force of darkness, along with it. Contemplation of honor, loyalty, steadfastness, dedication to the light, versus the flip side of guile and deceptiveness, and indifference to the genesis of massive destruction and suffering, would apparently be necessary for me to carry as an active resonating energy in my field, so that I could discover and prepare blessed flower frequencies to enhance the former characteristics, while canceling frequencies to diminish the unwelcome latter characteristics. For me, the most important meaning of the entire ring saga distilled into the heart that is entirely pure becomes an immense power, able to draw support from the far reaches of the universe, the mind of God, to prevail against enormous odds and great darkness. The Star Wars prequel trilogy, the second trilogy conceived by Lucas, offers a different but related message. It helps us recognize through the great visual imagery of the story how latent destructive traits within a person, especially pride and arrogance of an untamed ego, can become activated to the point of becoming a profoundly negative force. Over the course of the three movies, we see the development of the main protagonist, Anakin Skywalker. It is immediately evident in the first movie, showing scenes of his early years, that Anakin is a child prodigy. He has lightning-fast reflexes, advanced problem-solving skills, and a strong air of confidence. Even as a child, when he encounters beautiful Queen Padme Amidala, Natalie Portman, who is several years his senior, he fancies that she should be as smitten with him as he is with her. His irritation is evident when she treats him as the child he is. When the spiritual master Qui-Gon, a Jedi Knight played by Liam Neeson, closely observes Anakin, he suspects that Anakin is the rare being predicted in a Jedi prophecy that would, quote, bring balance to the Force, end quote, light versus dark. In the second movie of the trilogy, we encounter Anakin 10 years later, now 20 years of age, well underway in his training under the tutelage of Jedi Master Obi-Wan Kenobi, to become a highly revered Jedi Knight, a force for righteousness. Anakin is handsome, powerful, and arrogant. As he interacts with Obi-Wan, his ego is constantly on edge, feeling humiliated that he should still have to listen to the advice of a teacher that he feels he has already surpassed. When we observe Anakin, who has become a man, interact with Senator Queen Amidala, it becomes clear that she has been an obsessional fixation of his from childhood. By force of will, he intends to seduce her, violating the chasteness that is an important part of his Jedi oath, all the while rationalizing his actions at every step down the slippery slope of self-justification. Senator Amidala tries to discourage Anakin's seduction, but she cannot withstand the force of his personality, and he prevails, eventually causing her heartbreak that leads to her death. In the meantime, another subplot is concurrently developing that carries into the third and final installment of the Star Wars trilogy. Supreme Chancellor Palpatine is introduced as an important political figure in the Galactic Republic that Senator Amidala serves. We have seen him previously in the first movie, and he always appeared to be thoughtful, just, and even caring. In the second movie of the trilogy, he begins by maintaining that persona, but as opportunities develop which allow him to seize power, intermittently we see flashes that reveal his true character. We eventually discover that he is actually a supremely evil Sith Lord by the name of Darth Sidious, Insidious, who has cloaked himself and his intentions in the respectable figurehead of Palpatine. The Dark Lord masquerading as a servant of the people strikes me as a theme that is profoundly important in our times. Darkness masquerading as light is at the core of modern politics and technocracy, preventing the expression of the paradise that is our earth. With his true identity cloaked, having adopted the image of Palpatine, Darth Sidious recognizes that he can ensnare Anakin to obtain his power and allegiance by taking advantage of a fatal flaw, Anakin's rapacious ego. Always on guard against the prospect of being slighted, ever preoccupied with the annoyance of never receiving sufficient adulation. If Anakin's love of Padme were true, it might have saved him from Darth Sidious, but Anakin's love was a vain love and became more tainted when he had a dream of impending doom, Padme dying in childbirth, that bore a strong resemblance to a horribly unsettling and prophetic dream about threat to his mother. When he went searching for his mother, he discovered her just before her death and found that she had been brutally beaten. He became insanely enraged at the loss of what he loved and went on a killing spree, annihilating the perpetrators and all the nearby innocents. As a result of his mother's death and the dream of Padme's similar ill fate, Anakin became completely vulnerable to Darth Sidious' lure, the prospect of gaining even greater power, the power over death. Darth Sidious suggested that if Anakin were to pledge him complete allegiance, he could teach him the Sith Lord Darth Plagueis technique to prevent death, an ability only gained through the dark side of the Force. With the prospect of learning how to avert death to save Padme and remain immortal to fulfill his own agenda, Anakin abdicated all allegiance to the Jedi, abandoned his alignment with the light, and pledged to serve the forces of darkness as Sidious' new apprentice, who soon became known as Darth Vader. Ironically, he never had the opportunity to save Padme, who died in childbirth while he was recovering from near-fatal wounds he received when dueling Obi-Wan Kenobi. I looked at each of these trilogies and questioned how they might relate to me and how I could potentially benefit by reflecting on them before embarking on what I felt would be a truly momentous Flower Essence mission. Themes that stood out for contemplation from both movies were, first, how one naturally accumulates the power of light by maintaining a pure heart, faith, hope, and trust. Second, delusion and erosion of light that is a consequence of identifying with the feeling of being diminished, not receiving what we believe is rightfully ours. Third, learning how rage, anger, and associated destruction can arise from deep hurt or a sense of entitlement, and learning about the folly of justifying those feelings and expressions, especially when they derive from the defeat of personal desires. And fourth, the importance of learning to identify the signature of darkness and how to sense its premonitory signs. This is heavy stuff, the subject of forces of darkness and light at play within each of us. One reason why people don't shift more quickly toward self-realization and enlightenment may be that they are afraid to look at that subject. But I hope that you will take heart, because what will become clear by the end of this book is that there is a wonderful, updated, easy way to rapidly increase the power of goodness, light, and God's source wisdom within you, and at the same time, reduce attractor fields that draw to us darkness. I shall explain in part 3 how to apply certain flower frequencies for that to occur. Whether a dream manifests or not seems to involve several conundrums. It is a complex matter and a phenomenon that is difficult to penetrate clearly because there are so many invisible factors at play. How can we elucidate what those factors are? First, let us look at how we choose. Behavioral economics is a specialized discipline that analyzes the factors that come into play, which prompt an individual to choose one way or the other when making a purchasing decision. Dan Ariely of the MIT Media Lab, an expert in behavioral economics, explains how relativity is a critical issue in the selection process. He states in his best-selling book, Predictably Irrational, that people generally don't know what they want until they see it in context. He writes, quote, "We are always looking at things around us in relationship to others. We can't help it. We always compare jobs with jobs, vacations with vacations, lovers with lovers, and wines with wines. Relativity helps us make decisions in life, but it can also make us downright miserable. Why? Because jealousy and envy spring from comparing our lot in life with that of others. In order to make a selection between two objects, we have to assign more value to one than the other. And that is fine for choosing a toaster. But what happens if we want to weigh the value or merit of one of our dreams? Do we compare it to someone else's dream? That could be pure folly, a misguided version of keeping up with the Joneses. If we care to lead anything more than a superficial life, we have to look at our motives. What is the reason for our dreams, and from whence do they spring? Is the field of creativity and potential awareness from which our dreams arise bursting with joy and gratitude for the love of creation which sustains us, even as we have made very poor choices which hurt us and our earth? Or is it contaminated by discontent? Is that creative field selfish, resonating with darkness, or is it altruistic, seeking alignment with the light? In order to evaluate the motive of our dreams, we cannot be controlled by the sway and delusion of our own ego mind and the ego minds of those that have defiled our current society and defined its norms. But how do we avoid that? Simple. Just by embodying all the principles and teachings of the world's most enlightened masters and whatever representative of God is the focus of your religion. Are you smiling? I hope so, because the last sentence is obviously written in jest. What is true and heartening is that frequencies in special flowers remove many of our illusions so that we can more easily encounter our real life purpose, begin living it, and move one step at a time closer to fulfilling our dreams. Sometimes it can just be plain difficult to know honestly and in depth what motivates our choices and our dreams. We naturally seek guidance and instruction from the best sources to which we have access for the purpose of gaining wisdom in this area. From the non-denominational standpoint, there are a number of thought transformation educators and spiritual teachers in the public eye at this point in time. Some of them have audiences in the millions. What I find truly interesting about the most popular of these teachers is that they studiously avoid mentioning forces of darkness, powers of evil. Why is that? Is that because A, they have created a paradigm that excludes existence of darkness, for they believe recognizing it would remove individual power and authority to be the architect of one's own future? B, at a core yet subtle level, they themselves do not feel, observe, or believe in the influence of malevolent energy and forces. Or C, they feel that to mention the existence of destructive forces for which there are no simple means of control would create fear, render them susceptible to being labeled a fringe lunatic, dilute their useful instruction, which can proactively help people, and, importantly, erode their base of followers. I believe the answer is primarily C and secondarily A. Footnote number one. In recent years that I have worked with patients, I've become much more aware when destructive forces and energies are attached to them, and I'm able to measure when those unwanted energies leave. Although I have absolutely no interest in becoming an exorcist, I take note when distortion fields are negatively influencing my patients, and I apply flower frequencies to remove that distortion, accentuate the light, and restore balance. End of footnote. Continuing. So who are some of the groups that do discuss forces of darkness and how to overcome powers of evil? First, Christian splinter factions that speak a great deal about spiritual warfare and approach the removal of darkness through prayer and specific types of ceremony. Second, the so-called lunatic fringe, ufologists, conspiracy theorists, etc., who are definitely fringe, but not necessarily lunatic. Many of their observations are certainly worth noting. Footnote number two. The real conspiracy seems to be the mainstream power brokers perpetrating crimes, primary and secondary, who are able to cover them up and remain free from censure and out of jail. End footnote. Third, New Age thinkers who are well versed in the tenets of energy medicine, and who know from experience that distortional frequencies, that is, dark energies, exist and have negatively affected the body. These individuals are among the constituency prone to study shamanic practices that address straight on how to manage unwanted destructive influences that may touch us. Footnote number three. As long as the shamanic practices come through a highly evolved lineage, such as the teachings of Don Miguel Ruiz or Alberto Villoldo, my impression is that they are very useful. End footnote. And four, a free thinker by the name of Anastasia, who defies categorization and perceives the world in a radically simple yet profoundly deep way, without distraction, living as a recluse in a remote Siberian forest. Her biography, Autobiography, is written by Vladimir Maigret and consists of 9 books the first titled with her name, Anastasia. Footnote number 4. Anastasia is the first of many books in the Ringing Cedar series. It is written as though it is the true-life, present-day story of a mystical recluse with superhuman abilities, named Anastasia, living in the remote Siberian taiga. Maigret claims to have met her, fathered children with her, and learned esoteric secrets from her about society in ancient Russia. Despite the fact that Maigret is reportedly a scoundrel of an entrepreneur, an imposter, he has written a very interesting series of books that carry an inspiring message about lost knowledge from ancient civilizations to serve as a guide for reestablishing agrarian culture in our modern times. End footnote. Little Dreams, Big Dreams, Challenges to Manifestation. A major purpose of this chapter is to help you appreciate commonly overlooked reasons you may need help and can truly benefit from divine dispensations resident in certain flowers, so that your big dreams, especially, but little ones too, can become manifest. I am not using the term dream in the normal way, that is, visions or images some people see during sleep that are often vague, confusing, or senseless. What I mean by dream is aligned with the Aboriginal view of dreaming the world into existence. This most often occurs when we are in a harmonious waking state and intentionally tune into streams of energy that flow as a consequence of our beneficent thoughts or actions or those of others, resulting in the crystallization of form as an image that physically embodies in life. Following is my effort at defining, describing three types of dreams as points of reference for understanding the relative degree to which they may be challenged or blocked from manifestation. First, a big dream has an objective that is selfless and altruistic, with the capacity to influence many people in a positive way. Second, a combo dream has personal desires associated with it, but may have the potential to influence others or many others in a positive way. Third, a little dream is something we personally desire that helps us feel more comfortable, safe, stronger in self-esteem, etc. Its influence generally does not expand much beyond one's self or one's family, though from the perspective of our quantum universe, the tiniest choice affects everything. As we stair-step up in our evolutionary development, hopefully toward the light, all levels of dreams may be important for us to fulfill. Little dreams, for example, obtaining a new car, have the least likelihood of drawing fire from, quote, oppositional forces, end quote, because their fulfillment has neither far-reaching implications nor the ability to tip balance of power in the world domain of light versus dark, love versus manipulation, domination, control. A relatively recent and good example of a very large combo dream is the creation of Facebook. Big dreams, for example, furthering and completing the work of inventor genius Nikola Tesla to perfect and bring into use a non-internal combustion engine that works by tapping into virtually unlimited ambient energy that exists in the Earth and above the Earth so that neither fossil fuels nor nuclear energy need to be used, would likely draw huge oppositional forces and would be very dangerous for any individual or group to undertake. Existing structures for economic and geopolitical domination and control would be toppled if such a power source were disseminated. They would be loath to let that happen. Who or what are oppositional forces? And how to avoid a visit to your local insane asylum? When we once acknowledge existence of the most common, ambient, obstructing energies, described following, and hierarchically more potent forces of darkness that have an agenda, it is profoundly important to recognize that we must always assess ourselves first to see if we are the source of obstruction, the cause of our dreams not manifesting. Otherwise, if we initially attribute our failure to outside influences, we abdicate our divine birthright of creative ability and power and run the risk of inhabiting a delusional world. There are two common sources of obstructing energies, which we might interpret as oppositional forces. First is our soul's past history of actions, choices, resulting in accumulated frequencies that are embedded in our being and influence our birth and the life thereafter, known as karmic inheritance in Eastern religions or transgenerational influence in the Judeo-Christian tradition. Second is the realm of humanity's collective unconscious described by psychiatrist Carl Jung, that we can unwittingly enter psychically and erroneously interpret as our own. Footnote number 5. Part 3 of this book has been created with the intention of guiding one through personal evolutionary steps, and with the aid of special flower frequencies, help remove energetic disturbances that have been holding us back, allowing us to become more clear in our ability. After a period of time where we give focused attention to cleaning up our own house, in New Age jargon, doing our shadow work, we are more likely to sense and see clearly outside ourselves to ascertain if we are being influenced by unwanted or malevolent energies, forces. Cross-culturally, and over a long period of history, there are well-established precedents that point to the existence and influence within humans of unwanted or malevolent energies, forces. In the Spanish-speaking countries of the Americas, for example, two words are commonly used in the practice of spiritual healers, shamans, to describe unseen causes of feeling poorly. Susto, translating as scare, fright, shock, and daño, translating as damage, harm, hurt. An example of susto is driving a car and experiencing an inattentive person rapidly and unexpectedly turn in front of you, nearly causing a severe accident. That could very easily cause a shock to the nervous system, resulting in disturbance and brain depolarization that leaves a distortional field within us, which can cause ill health symptoms. An example of daño is being the recipient of words used carelessly or words that have been crafted to be hurtful by someone of ill intent, such as, quote, "I know you've lost weight, but to me, you're still fat," end quote. Simple words have a profound ability to cause lasting damage in others and to the one responsible for them. There is another form of daño that real shamans deal with, addressed forthcoming, and that is the projection of malintention through fearsome illusion. As I have mentioned previously, there are wonderful new methods in energy psychology, a modern, clear, and very efficient form of shamanism, to remove both the influence of daño and susto, but they require finding someone who is gifted and well-trained in these specialized techniques. My mission in the high Andes on the upcoming trip was to find exceptional flower frequencies that anyone can use on their own to remove the types of shock and hurt just mentioned, and also to remove obstructing energies at a much deeper level than humans can normally access. I am delighted to report that my dreams with respect to finding astonishing flowers there for those purposes were realized. Footnote 6. A remarkable blend of flowers from that region are combined in a product named Pure Potential and also in a product called Clear. When we move into the realm of trying to understand potent forces of darkness, those that have kept the majority of our world in an enslaved state, preventing the natural expression of the paradise that is this earth, we face a daunting conundrum. Darkness has been able to prevail precisely because of its great skill at covering its tracks, keeping its origins and methods of operation invisible. I was soon to discover information that was really heartening. Information that exposes an example of sleight of hand, of disruptive forces, that is actually meagerly powerful, but that causes us great disturbance because it projects the illusion of the real dark side of the force. I learned how we could end up losing energy by fearing what is an energetic mirage, or at least not materially very substantive. With a proper perspective, one can arrive at a point of psychological and spiritual solace so as not to worry about personal vulnerability to attack from the forces of darkness. If one has a light-filled dream that is so powerful and positively evolutionary that it draws the attention of real darkness and forces of evil, one only could have achieved that vision by the grace of God, accompanied by legions of light and angelic protectors that can prevail against any challenge. In the rare instance of such a dream, the intelligent choice is to hand over the details of fulfilling the dream to our Creator, the only one possessing complete enough sight to bring it safely into manifestation. It would appear that the vast majority of light-filled dreams attract oppositional force from the servants of darkness, not from the masters themselves. As we shall see in the following chapter, it is often within our personal ability to deal with such meddlesome underlings because they commonly operate through illusion. If, from a point of stillness, we learn to see what is real, and if we take advantage of the profoundly coherent and source-aligning frequencies of special flowers, the illusory challenges of darkness can vanish. End of chapter 10. Commentary. In this podcast, I've referred to fictional characters depicted in movies that are masters of deception. Those characters include individuals and collectives driven by an unquenchable thirst for control, power, and the accumulation of material resources to be used as they dictate. If the truth of what has resulted in our world shutdown is ever fully revealed, we will see real-life figures that are certainly as monstrous as the Dark Sith Master in the Star Wars prequel or the embodiment of evil in Lord of the Rings. There is increasingly a growing polarization of two camps of individuals. On the one hand, those that are attuned to the carefully crafted messages delivered at every level of mainstream electronic communication. And on the other hand, those that see through deception and are searching for information that feels aligned with what they can internally perceive must be true. I hope that those who follow this podcast series will embrace the hidden world I have encountered inhabited by benevolent forces resident in special flowers. It is a world that seems very close to the elvish world so beautifully depicted in Lord of the Rings, full of good magic and the potential for miracles. As we shall see in coming chapters, so-called magic that is real actually appears magical because we do not normally see the dimensions where it operates. We assume that since it cannot be seen, it does not exist. In fact, so much of what appears physically is first designed and assembled on the fifth and higher dimensions described in quantum physics and biology. Then it moves down into our physical realm. It is the job of the central section of my book, Part 2, to help you understand the basic structure of the invisible quantum world where the seeming miraculous powers of certain flowers reside.